guys originally on Instagram. I don't know if you guys, it came up somewhere on like the popular feed, but I started following your journey, I guess, towards the later part of it when you guys were walking across the U.S. And I've had this fascination with people walking across the U.S. and making long walks for the past couple years now. I admire it. I think there's part of me that wishes I could do it. Maybe I could. I'm too chicken or just can't get my shit together to do that. I did a little research, kind of have the base information about your guys' previous walk, which was from the East Coast to the West Coast. But for the people that are listening and have no idea who you are or what I'm talking about, can you kind of give an overview of how you got into the last walk you did?
From the Atlantic to the Pacific?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, basically, walking across the country was just a dream of mine for years growing up. And my uncle actually rode a motorcycle across the country when I was a kid. He did. And then it's just something I've always wanted to do. When I got older, I researched it and saw that people were actually doing it. And then I started working, and it kind of got put off. It was just kind of something I always wanted to do. And then I met Raina, and we met a month before we actually decided to go at a beach party in Hawaii.
And why were you in Hawaii? What put you guys both there? Were either of you living there?
I've been living in Hawaii for 10 years. Okay. I used to be in the Coast Guard. I was in the Coast Guard for 8 years, and I got stationed. My first couple of years was in San Diego, and then I got stationed in Hawaii after that. So that's how I got there. Raina moved there with her family, and she's originally from Seattle. I'm originally from New Jersey.
Gotcha.
So I got out of the Coast Guard, and then started working for like a parasail company, like a water sports company. I was a mechanic and worked on all the boats down in the harbor, and then got real involved with, you know, the ocean and protecting the environment. But then I still had that dream to, you know, walk across the country. So when I met Raina, I brought it up one night, and she was like, "Oh, that sounds great." And she's like, "Would you actually like really want to go? Like, if we went and like left next week, would you go?" I'm like, "Of course." So at that moment, you know, in our lives, you know, we weren't in a lease. My job, I'm kind of able to put it on hold, and it was kind of like a now or never. Like we could, it was possible. So we decided to just really go for it, and we made the decision to just start changing our lives and make it happen.
How amazing that you find somebody, you know, that you just meet who's like, "Yeah, let's do that next week." I can't even make people that have been in my life for a while do things, you know, a month in advance for a moment. Like,
I know. It's crazy how it happened, because I've told every single one of my friends in Hawaii I know about this is something I wanted to do, and I've asked some of my other friends in the past, but it's kind of a hard thing, you know, for someone to do. You have to take off time, mm-hmm. work, you have to save up, you have to, you know, actually want to do it. A lot of people don't want to do it. So it was just, it's just crazy how it happened. And, you know, she shares the same passions as I do for traveling and for the environment. So it just worked out.
Had she ever, and I mean, I don't know if she can also answer for herself. She wants, had she ever thought about walking across country?
Never. She actually, before this trip, before the Atlantic Pacific walk, she's only camped one time.
Oh, this was a crash course. Like, wow.
Yeah, so she went from camping one time in her life before that to camping pretty much every single night for 7 months long across the country.
Well, that gives me hope, because I'm not a big camper. I own a tent. I like bring it when I go on road trips just in case, and then I always like chicken out and end up in a motel. So I feel like I'd kind of be more along her. You know, I have friends that always ask me, why do I want to walk? And I can't quite like have that. Like, why do I even want to try these, like, even little walks?
Yeah.
It's just something I want to do. I don't know if I really have a true explanation. For you, can you explain what it was that, I mean, was it just wanting to emulate your uncle's journey, or?
No, I think, well, I've always loved traveling, but I think it was more for the challenge of to see if, you know, I pushed myself. You know, I was in the military for 8 years. You know, I successfully did that, and, you know, a couple other things in my life. But, you know, walking from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, in my mind, was just like the ultimate challenge. And I was like, I want to see if my body can handle it, and like mentally and physically, and see if I can actually do it or not. It's like kind of the ultimate challenge for me. And I just, you know, thought it'd be something awesome to do too, you know?
So why start at the East, on the East Coast, as opposed to the West Coast?
Well, honestly, I didn't do too much planning for this trip. What brought me to Jacksonville, Florida was I have a friend that lives there, and she, lived right on the coast, and I have friends that live in San Diego. I wanted to finish in California. I didn't want to finish on the East Coast. I have more friends and family, you know, in California than I do in, you know, Jacksonville, Florida.
Gotcha. So you wanted to finish at home.
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey, but I have a lot more friends and family, you know, mm-hmm. in the California side than, you know, in Florida. So, and I think personally it's nicer to end in Southern California than in Florida, you know. But that's kind of how we picked our route. And then everything in between, I kind of mapped it out. But it changed so much. You know, you could sit down and, okay, I'm going to go to this town and, you know, then we're going to go here and then we're going to go here. But once you're actually out on the road, everything changes. It doesn't matter what you wrote down. You know, you can go to one town and everything's fine. And the next town, the road is in between. There's no shoulder or, you know, there's a tunnel that you can't walk through. It's just, and then it sends you somewhere else. And it changes so much.
And so, did you walk across, so if you went from like Florida to San Diego, were you walking across the southern portion or did you kind of go up and down?
Oh, no, we stayed on the southern states. So Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, all the way across Texas. Texas took 2 months itself. And then New Mexico, Arizona, and California.
Wow. So when did you leave? What month were we in?
It was March 11th.
March 11th.
And then we ended on October 2nd.
How were those first few days?
actually, the second day was probably one of the worst because Jacksonville, Florida is an extremely ghetto, dangerous town that me and Raina should not be walking through some of those towns. And walking through ghetto neighborhoods with, you know, gangs and drugs and that kind of stuff, I didn't really think about it too much. You know, I did planning, but I didn't plan for that. You know, I kind of did, but I didn't think too much about it. And that second day, we were walking out of Jacksonville, and we ended up extremely bad part of town. And we shouldn't have been there. And we actually walked, we got through it fine. It was really dangerous. We actually we wrapped our cart up with a tarp so nobody could see the stuff that we had. And we just put our heads down, we put our hoods over our heads and we just walked through as fast as we could. And then when we got through that town, we were talking to these people and they're like, did you just come from over that bridge? They're like, that's one of the most dangerous sections of town. Like, people die there every day. The cops don't even go in that neighborhood.
Wow.
And we were like, yeah, we just walked through there. So
in my head, it's like you're thinking of, like, you know, road safety, you know, are you going to run into a snake? Like, you don't think about walking through the bad parts of town.
No, sometimes you just have to. Sometimes it's just, you just have to get through it. And yeah, I didn't think about it too much either when I was starting, so.
Well,
but that got real quick.
Well, at least you got that out of the way in the beginning and you guys didn't give up there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean,
after that, we just planned for those kind of areas and we looked a little ahead for those kind of neighborhoods.
So would you then, like, when you would end up in about to enter another bad town, would you guys, you know, go the extra miles to avoid it moving forward?
Sometimes we would basically, you know, you can go online and you can try to research stuff like that, but the best way to do it is to talk to the locals and people that live in the area and say, hey, you know, it can go from one road can be safe to the next road over is really bad. So the best way to do it is just to talk to people. When you're in a safe neighborhood, say, hey, you know, what's the next town like? Is it, you know, is it okay? Is it safe for us to walk through? Things like that. So that's kind of how we figured out how to do it.
And when it came to finding a place to camp out at every night, you know, I'm sure that was an adventure within itself. Where were some of the surprising places you found yourself having to, you know, make a home for the evening?
Camping at night was probably one of the things I thought about the most, like planning. And I was a little nervous for it, but in the beginning, you kind of have a couple options. You can get a hotel, which is, you know, you don't do often because it's expensive. And there's, you know, we do that maybe once a week, once every maybe 10 days because you have to do laundry and take showers and stuff. But regular camping and campgrounds is probably the best. And then there's like stealth camping where you're just like putting up a tent on the side of the road or in the bushes or behind a building or stuff like that. So we've slept in every place imaginable, you know, all over the place. So it's just been, we have lots of stories from all the crazy areas we slept.
Do you have any crazy stories that stand out in your mind more than the other?
Texas, I think Texas was, we were, people in Texas are very, protective about their property. I think everything's fenced off there. We had a hard time finding places to kind of stealth camp because everything's got a fence on it. There's a lot of livestock and animals and private property. So, it was kind of hard because most of the time we would just, we'd walk until the sun was about to come down. Okay, sun's about to go down in half an hour, 45 minutes. Let's start looking for somewhere to put up the tent. And, pretty much if you're not in a city area, you can just be like, just dip off the side of the road, put up the tent, throw the camouflage. I have like a camouflage netting, and I just throw the camouflage over top of the tent so people can't see us that are driving by. But in Texas, it's a lot harder. The one time, I think it was like the first town that we were walking through. We were walking down this real pretty desolate road. There really wasn't any houses for, most of the day. And we were like, sun was going down. It's getting dark. We need to find a place. And we see this old logging road. And we walk down the logging road, and we find this parking lot in the back that has all these abandoned logging trucks, like all broken down and stuff. So we didn't see any other people around there, so we figured we'd just put up the tent in that parking lot, and we'd be fine. So we fell asleep, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody was right next to our tent shooting an automatic automatic rifle next to our tent. Like, just like going off right next to our tent.
What, just to wake you guys up? Or?
I think we never really figured out why he was there, what he was doing. So we both jump up. We look at each other. We're like, what the hell was that? We're like, holy crap. So we're like trying to be quiet, and just like listen for what was going on. And we can hear somebody walking around outside of our tent. And we're like, why is there somebody next to our tent with an automatic gun? Like, and there's no houses. There's nobody that should be even around this area. So we started freaking out, and I'm like, if I hear one more noise, I'm calling 911. This is too much. And as soon as I said that, there was a branch that broke right next to our tent. Like, the guy was like right outside, and I dialed 911, and my phone was at like 2%, and I had really low signal. And they answer, and they're like, hey, what's your emergency? I'm like, we're in the woods right now, we're camping. They're like, what are you doing? Because I guess they get a signal from where your cell phone is, where you're at, ping location. And they're like, what are you doing way out there? I'm like, well, we're walking across the country, and we're in the woods camping, and there's somebody shooting a gun right next to our tent. She's like, okay, we'll send some officers out there. And as soon as that happened, actually, right before I explained where we were, the call was lost. So they got hung up, and then my phone was about to die. And then they called back, and I was kind of like, able to tell them where we were. And about 15 minutes later, the cops, I could see the lights from the cops out on the logging road trying to shine them into the woods. We didn't want to leave the tent. We didn't even want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So, and then the lady calls him back. She said, the cops aren't going to come into the woods because they don't know where this guy's at. You need to go out and to the cops. So we had to get out of the tent, not knowing where this guy was, and walk to the logging road where the cops were. It was one of the scariest moments of my life, and Reyna's. And the cops were cool, and they were like, okay, let's get you out of here. I don't know where this guy is. I don't know what's going on. You're not on, well, they said we were on private property, but they didn't give us any trouble about it. And it was just like the logging company. And they loaded up our cart, Larry, and me and Reyna in the back of the squad and back of the SUV and drove us a mile down the road to a little, kind of like a convenience store place. And he was like, yeah, welcome to Texas. Everybody's got guns out here.
Oh, gosh.
We're like, what? So that was definitely one of the scariest, like, camping experiences. But,
well, man, I mean, and I know the cop had told you that it was property, but then, you know, it's a company's private property as opposed to like a residence. You know, I thought the story was going to be like somebody just being like, get off my property. Like, yeah, that's, it's probably best
that's
you stay
why
in
we were
your
so freaked
tent.
Out. Yeah.
And
but,
that, so, and then at what part in your journey was that? Because when did you finally hit Texas?
That was, how many months? That's the third month? The third month in? Yeah, Texas was pretty much right in the center, so, but that was like the beginning of Texas.
Wow.
So that was about 3 months in. But, and we've had little scares here and there, but nothing that came close to that. That was definitely the sketchiest and scariest point of our trip, and that kind of messed us up for a little bit. We were very nervous at night.
Did you spend the next night after that in a hotel?
No, we couldn't. We would have, but we were in Davy Crockett National Forest, and it was like,
oh, there you go.
There's no hotels. There's just camping all over the place. But the next night we stayed in a campground, so we felt safe.
Yeah, but, whenever I'm on the road, you know, because I will think about this, like when I'm driving, like on random back roads, and you're like, well, you know, there's so much open land, but I see fences around them. You're like, I don't know whose random property that is. You know, where do you find a place to camp if you're not coming upon a campground or you don't have, you know, the money to go stay in a motel for the night?
Exactly. Yeah, you just gotta make the best out of what you got and plan. You know, you gotta look. We use our phones a lot for like Google Maps and seeing the actual landscape. You know, maps are good, but Google Maps, as long as you have service, you can actually see, you know, areas of woods. You're like, okay, well, the road's here, and then there's a little, like, area of wood over here with no fence. You can see that there's actually no fence there sometimes with the new updates on the maps. And that's kind of what we're doing right now. Like, we've been camping a lot on this trip so far. And we'll be like, okay, the beach is here, and then there's, like, a little wooded area. Let's just get to that area and then try to find a spot.
But how do you keep your phone charged while you're on the road and probably have no idea when you're going to see the next outlet?
We had a, on our last trip, we had a solar panel.
Hmm.
We have a solar panel for this trip. Well, actually, our solar panel burned up when we were in the Mojave Desert. It just stopped working, our last one. I don't know. I didn't know solar panels can get too much sun, but I think it did in the Mojave Desert. But, it stopped working then, but we have, right now we have a little one, a Goal Zero little solar panel, but it's been kind of gloomy out, like cloudy and stuff, so we haven't used it too much. We just have a lot of portable external chargers for this trip. But the last trip, we used the solar panel the whole time.
And what can you plug into the solar? Is it just like a regular outlet that you can plug whatever you needed to into that? How's that work?
No, it's just two USBs, so you can charge, you know, our radio, we can charge both of our cell phones, and our lights and things like that. But you can't, like, put a regular 120 plug in it. It's just a regular, just USBs.
Just USBs. Well, that, for what, yeah, what we use nowadays, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's pretty much, USB is pretty much everything we got, so.
So I'm wondering about, you know, how this walk taxed on you physically. You know, after just the, it's, you know, talking about the first trip that you took from the Atlantic Pacific, just after like a week or two on the road, you know, what were the effects on your feet? What were the effects on your muscles?
Well, we didn't do too much breaking in for our shoes, so we probably should. But we really didn't have time, you know. By the time we made the decision, what's that? Yeah, we broke them in while we were on the road, but we didn't, you know, by the time we made the decision to go on our last trip, it was only a few weeks till we were actually on the road. It happened all so quick, so we didn't even have a chance. So we were trying to break in our shoes, you know, the first month, and also getting our, none of us done any long distance walking or anything like that before in our lives. So we didn't even do any practicing like a day before. We just went straight into it. And I think our first day we did 22 miles.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, that was a pretty good day for day one. But the next day we were a mess, but, our toenail, four of my toenails were pretty much black and falling off. Raina had like three toenails that were, they just turned black, I think, from just being smashed in your shoe all day, and they just get real loose and then they fall off. So, and then you get a lot of blisters and, shin splints and just the bottoms of your feet just from walking for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day are just super sore, you know? So you wake up at night to go to the bathroom and you get out of bed and you barely, you know, walk. You're just like super sore. But surprisingly, when you wake up in the morning, like your body recovers pretty quick from it all. So you can keep going.
I mean, did you guys have to start doing, I mean, were you stretching every morning before you would start your walk, or were you just getting ready?
Not as much as we probably should have, but yeah, we stretched a little bit in the morning. But you know, even though we did the whole country already, and now we're, you know, doing California, and we still get sore. There's no way around it. It just hurts. So no matter what you do, I don't think your body's supposed to be walking for 10 hours a day. So you're going to get sore.
You know, and you mentioned, you know, that you care for the environment. What's the tie between the, you know, you're caring for the environment and the walks that you're taking?
Kind of pretty much, you know, you want to go out and go on these adventures and be in the environment. And, you know, we see the beaches every day. We feel as if, like, if you're going to be out here and you should, you know, do your part to take care of, you know, the planet and spread the awareness about the issues. That's what we're trying to do because, you know, I think we have the means to be able to spread awareness about the problems. I think a lot of people don't know through our social media. And, you know, we meet so many people every day. You know, we just try to spread the awareness about issues with, you know, refusing single-use plastic and how much our beaches are trashed. And, you know, in Hawaii, I don't think a lot of people realize how, like, everybody pictures Hawaii as this beautiful, perfect place, but the beaches over there are just trashed with not only plastic and trash from the island, but floating in from other countries. Marine debris, just old plastic that washes up and it's all over the place, because of that, you know, the Pacific garbage patch. So pretty much get out there, be adventurous, do your thing, but also take care of the environment and spread awareness about issues that are happening.
So are you just having conversations one-on-one? Do you guys stop and give talks?
Because we raised donations for the Surf Rider Foundation and Sustainable Coastlines, both of them in the Oahu chapters. So, you know, we would get donations, and one-third of our donations that we received on the road we gave to them, and they used that money for beach cleanups and educating the youth and things like that. And also, you know, when people ask us why we're doing this stuff, we tell them why we're doing it, you know, mostly for the adventure, but also for the environmental issues. And then we have our Facebook, Instagram, YouTube channel, and our website that also explains everything.
And what's the Surf Rider Foundation?
The Surf Rider Foundation is a huge foundation. It's all over the U.S. There's chapters all along the West Coast. They're a big foundation that's involved in, you know, making steps for cleaner water, you know, stopping the marine debris and plastic pollution, and you know, they stop the cigarette smoking on the beaches in Hawaii, and they had a part of that. Plastic bags, they don't give out plastic bags to a lot of places in Hawaii anymore, like the shopping stores and mm-hmm. places like that. So they're just slowly making steps to make things more sustainable and, you know, things like that.
Oh, great. So I think I was walking, one of my favorite, you know, I think the thing that I would be looking forward to the most was getting out there and actually having conversations with random people that you're probably encountering all the time.
Oh yeah.
But I can only imagine, as you guys are coming through town with your cart, that, you know, do people mistake you for homeless people? You know, how do
all
people receive you
every
when
day.
You're coming into their town and you're trying to have a conversation with them?
There's a train coming. A lot of times we get people think we're homeless. Yep.
Oh, there's the train.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Actually, was it 2 days ago, there was the shooting in San Bernardino. And we wanted to get a hotel that night because they didn't find the guys yet. So we were like, okay, let's get a hotel tonight, make our families, you know, feel safer. And we wanted to feel safe too. We didn't want to be camping randomly. So went to go to this hotel, and the guy, we booked it online to get a cheaper rate. And then when we went there, the guy wouldn't let us stay there. He thought we were homeless. Or he thought we were going to, like, because of the car, I think he was like Middle Eastern or Indian, and he didn't really understand. I'm not really sure, but he didn't understand what was going on and why we were doing this. We tried to explain it to him, and then he just told us we couldn't stay there. And so we had to leave, you know, and then we had to walk all the way back up. That was at the Best Western, but we went back. We had to go all the way up this huge hill back up to the coast and then go down, and then we found another hotel. But that's happened to us a lot. And I think people from other countries have a hard time understanding what we're doing, you know. It's not their fault. That's just, you know, it's not something I think they would do. I think people from America kind of understand it a little bit more. What's that?
Yeah, they're probably like, you're doing this for fun. One of my friends, the one who sometimes hosts this podcast with me, she's like, why do I want to volunteer to suffer and walk? There's people that have had to do that for hardships. I'm not going to volunteer to do that. I'm like, okay, you have
exactly,
a point
there. Yeah. So, but also, you know, we meet a lot of awesome, we've met amazing people. And that's pretty much one of the best things we've come from, that we've got from walking, like, on our last trip. And this is, there's so many good people out in the world, and so many people have done amazing things for us and, you know, let us stay in their house or, you know, help us with food or do any, give us donations. And, like, it's crazy what people will do, and they're total strangers. But you also have to be careful who you're accepting things from. Make sure you don't get yourself into trouble.
Right. But I mean, we all love our family and our friends. I mean, for the most part. But it is crazy how when it's a stranger, there's like it's a different connection. We'll open up to them more. People will help each other more. I mean, what are some of the, you know, the awe-aspiring moments where people have just been really kind to you while you're on the road?
One of the best circumstances was we were walking through the Mojave Desert. Coming into California from Arizona, from Parker, California. It's like a 120-mile stretch of desert, absolutely nothing but, you know, sand and hills. And it was extremely tough for us. We were out there for going on our fourth day. It was probably one of the hardest moments of our entire trip. It was 120 degrees on the gauge, and it was, you know, with the heat coming from the road, I think it's like another 15 degrees. So it was like, it felt like 135 some degrees. And we tried to walk at night, but that was too dangerous because this road we were on, there's a lot of trucks that travel at night. There's no shoulder. It's all sand. So you had to actually walk in the road. And it was really rough. So like our fourth day, we were really low on water. Our solar panel broke. Because the sun just like burnt it out. So our phones were, Raina's phone was dead. My phone was at like 2%. And we actually got caught in a dust storm. A dust storm came out that day and just blasted us and our eyes. And it was just miserable. And it was getting to the point where, like, if you know, Raina was very red in the face. I think she was like first signs of a heat stroke, you know? And it was getting to the point where it was like life or death. And I was like, okay, you know, we really want to walk this entire thing, but we're not going to die over it. So this family from Arizona messaged us on Instagram and said they wanted to come out and bring us some water. So we're like, okay, that's awesome. So they were actually coming out there that day. And when they met up with us, we were delirious, like, and having a hard time, and they were like, you guys don't look good at all, and you guys should maybe want to get out of here. And me and Raina just looked at each other, and we're like, yeah, we should probably do that. And they're like, we have a vacation rental house that we rent out in Joshua Tree, California, that you guys can stay at. And so they got us out of there, and we decided it wasn't, we're, you know, we would have had to be out there for probably 3 or 4 more days to get through that desert, and we probably would have died. One of us would have died. And that's, I'm not being, you know, I'm not telling stories, like, it was bad. And so they got us out of there, and they brought us to their house. They took us in for, like, 3 days. They gave us this vacation rental house to ourselves for free. They gave us, they fed us. They're an amazing, amazing family. They also do trail cleanups with our kids, and they're really active and with the environment, and they do all these hikes and stuff, and they go to the Baja races, and they volunteer for that. So that family was just amazing. So that was just one circumstance. Yeah, it was really, really cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just people reaching out for no other reason other than just to be kind. And that's also the crazy, amazing stuff that comes out of social media, because so often I use it all. I love my Instagram, you know, but
yeah.
I have moments where I'm like, I hate this and I want to give it up. And then you hear stories like that and you're like, oh, there are still good people out there.
Yeah, there's good people, and there's a reason. And the beginning of the trip, we're like, okay, we need to not share our location. We're scared that, like, somebody's going to come out and get us, if they know where we are, you know. We were, like, being super cautious of, you know, we'd post everything, like, 2 days later, so people wouldn't know where we were. But then we started realizing, like, if somebody was ever going to come out and do anything bad to us or whatever, like, it's going to happen. There's no avoiding it. And telling people where we are all the time and, like, sharing our location is probably safer than keeping it a secret. So then we just started, like, just always saying where we were and telling, that's what we're doing on this trip, too. We actually have a map on our website that says exactly every town that we're going to go through. So I think it's safer that way than, you know, trying to hide where we are, you know?
Well, yeah, and I'm sure your family and friends appreciate it, too, that they actually know where you guys are.
Yeah. Well, we would always tell them where we are. They always know where we are.
Oh, good. So yeah. You do this walk. Why do another walk?
We were about, I think, a little past Texas, and we were like, well, you know, we can get back to Hawaii. I can go back to work. Brandon can go back to work. We can, you know, get into a lease, or you know, if we can try to swing it and make this happen again. You know, we really like doing this kind of thing, and you know, we think we've got to kind of figure it out. And we were like, okay, well, let's try to see if we can get some sponsorship for help, and see if it's possible, because it's not cheap and we can't do it alone. So we're just like, well, maybe let's just see if we can keep going. You know, we really like doing this. It's fun. And we want to do it while we're young. We don't both want kids or any, you know, obligations. I don't own a house or have anything that's holding me down anywhere. So we're like, might as well do it now. So we just went for it. And we wrote, you know, all these companies and sponsorship, and we got support and sponsors from like Merrill and REI and those companies to help us out with gear and clothing. And so we're just going for it.
That's awesome. I'm so jealous. You know, it's like, I guess some people, their life is kind of set up in that way. You know, I probably didn't make some great decisions where now I have a whole bunch of bills to pay off and I have a lease. So I feel like, you know, I'm trapped. I can't, if I want, you know, and then.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure.
But
sure,
I was in that position too. And I had all these, you know, I knew I wanted to walk across the country. I knew I was going to do it one day. So I started kind of getting myself in a position to be able to just step away from everything. So I started paying my bills off years ago. And as much as I could get myself out of debt. And then I was in a lease where I can get out. I have a job where I can just get out. And then I was like kind of set up. And then I met Raina, and I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, we can actually go. And when she asked me, I was like, yep, I'm ready. You know? So you just got to make those steps like early in case the opportunity comes and you can go.
I know, that's awesome. I know, I work freelance, so in a sense, I do have it open where, like, I can walk away from my job because it's always walking away from me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not for everybody.
Yeah, it's still on the bucket list. So going the second time around, what were some things that you guys are doing differently? Maybe some things that you're not carrying with yourself this time, or things that you need to bring on the road with you guys the second time around?
Well, our gear... we have a lot better gear. Obviously, we got Merrill and REI, which are two best companies out there to help us out with gear and clothing. But our cart that we named Larry, big upgrade. We had a lot of mechanical problems on our last trip. I'm sure you saw on all of our videos.
I think I recall seeing you guys repairing tires quite often on your last walk.
Oh my, all the time, all the time. Like I think our front tire I've changed out like 7 or 8 times. The back one's probably 4 times. Bearings would go, tire would fall out. Like it was a struggle. It's a Schwinn baby stroller. It's not meant to go across the country. It's just supposed to go like around the neighborhood.
Right.
So we kind of like reinforced it to make it stronger, but still it was just a constant struggle. So this time we're still using the same car. We have the same frame and same handlebar setup and the whole thing, but we changed out the front tire. We got like a bike fork with a bigger inflatable front tire instead of like the weird little coaster tire on the front. And then we got huge, big, 20-inch 3.0 tires on the back, pretty much like a big beach cruiser tire, so it can go through the sand and go through the woods a lot better. We have, corn-resistant tires. It's just all around stronger for our car. And then we're not carrying as much water as we did on the last one. Water weighs a lot. So we were carrying up to 8 to 10 gallons at a time of water, you know, going through the deserts and stuff. We took the water tank out, and we're carrying our water on ourselves. We have new camel packs and our hydro flasks that we're wearing and carrying to carry our water. We don't have the big tank inside the car anymore. So, and I think that's, we got a new tent, nice tent. That one's good. And I think that's about it.
If you guys are carrying less water, is that safe to assume that you guys probably didn't really run out of water much on the previous walk?
Say that again?
Since you guys are carrying less water this time around, is that safe to say that the last time you did this walk, you didn't ever run out of water?
No, we ran out of water. That one time in the Mojave, we pretty much ran out. And then there's a stretch between Tatum, New Mexico, and Roswell, New Mexico. It's 73 miles. And we ran out of water, I think, about 10 miles before we got to Roswell. And it was hot. It was extremely hot. By the time we got into Roswell, we probably looked like something out of a movie, like scraping ourselves across the ground. And we get to this gas station, and we go in there, and it was just like, it looked like a mirage. Like, we were so delirious, and we're like, I didn't even know what to choose. It was like one of the hardest decisions ever. We were just like staring at all these trees. And it was pretty funny. Yeah, that's the one time, or the other time, that we ran out of water.
But do you just have a confidence then this time around of being able to find water if you run out of water?
We're not going through as much. You know, when in summer it was a dead summer when we were walking across the bottom state, and we're drinking so much water. This time going up the West Coast is, you know, you're constantly in town for the most part. I know up north there's going to be some longer stretches, but there's pretty much somewhere to get water every, you know, a few miles. There's a store or, you know, somewhere. But you just kind of judge it, you know. It's just, you know, when in the middle of the country, there's just like, it's like most of the time it's like 20 miles in between a town, 40 miles in between a town, 70, 120, like, out here, they're pretty close together until you get up north a little bit, and then they're further out. And when that happens, we'll just, you know, carry an extra jug or make sure everything's topped off before we go on these long stretches.
And, you know, having the cart seems genius. I've seen a couple other people that have used these carts on their long walks. While I'm sure it comes in really handy when you're on roads and straightaways, what kind of a burden does it become when you come to having to go way off road or go up a hill or a mountain?
We couldn't do this trip without it. Now, I have my back screwed up from being in the military, and carrying a pack is just not even an option. So we had to go with the cart. It's great on roads, you know, all day. But then, like you said, as soon as you get off road, it makes it a lot more difficult. And also, like, a lot of these roads don't have, you know, very big shoulder, and that's huge. The shoulder is of the road is your main concern every day. Like, is there a shoulder on this road coming up? You can walk 20 miles up a road, and all of a sudden, it's like a windy, curved road going down through the canyon, with no shoulder. And what do? You got to walk all the way back or something like that because, you know, the cart can't fit. Like, most of the time, if it was just you with a pack on, you could probably walk by it, you know, like with the cars going by safely. But the cart is like 3 feet wide and it's huge. It's not very maneuverable. So the cars come in, you're on the side of the road and there's no shoulder. It just makes it really hard.
And but, what do you guys do for added safety? Do you guys wear reflectors, bright colors?
Oh yeah, we have a big reflector orange flag on the front of our cart. We both wear reflective vests. And at nighttime, if we're walking at night, which is kind of rare, but it's been happening more often because it gets dark so early now. But we have our jackets light up, and then we have big spotlights on the car, and then rear lights. We're totally lit up. You can see us coming from a mile away.
Yeah, I'd be so terrified of, you know, the cars coming by. Because even if you think they see you, sometimes they're spacing out or, unfortunately, texting.
Yeah, we've seen a guy get hit by a car on a bike walking across the country. And then 2 days ago, we just saw there was a group of three guys on bikes that got hit by a car. One of them had to get airlifted. So it happens all the time. We've almost been hit, you know, tons of times. You can never put your head down. When you're on a road that there's cars coming at you, you have to look at every single car because everybody's texting, everybody's doing something else besides driving, and they'll just swerve right over on the side and not even see you. So you got to really pay attention.
Do you guys walk against the traffic?
Yeah. So if you're on a bike, legally you have to ride with traffic, which I think is stupid. I think everybody should go against traffic.
And I was always so confused with that because I feel like when I was a little kid, my parents would always tell me to ride facing the traffic so I could see what the cars were doing.
Yeah.
And as I got older, it was like, no, it's against the law to do that. And I'm like, wait, what? They're going to hit me.
It doesn't. I honestly do not understand it. We're on the side of the road all day long, and it makes no sense why bikes. I don't know. Somebody's got a good answer for it, but it seems so dangerous. You can put a mirror maybe up and look behind you, but it's hard to look in the mirror and see cars coming from behind you. But yeah, we walk against it. We walk so we can see the cars coming at us. But that we can do that legally because we're walking.
So now you're on your second walk. And what's the starting and end point of this walk?
What's the what?
What's the start to end point for this walk?
The start and end point? We started in the Mexican border down by Tijuana 6 days ago. Right now we're in San Clemente. And we're going to end up in Blaine, Washington, which is the last town right before you get into Canada.
Man, you're going to hit some winter weather as you keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys ready for that?
Yes. I think so. It's been cold already, and we're in Southern California. We woke up this morning in our tent, like, freezing, but...
I know, I saw your guys' picture on Instagram, and I was just freezing in my apartment, and I was like, I don't even know how they're doing that right now.
Yeah. Well, we have our tent is a four-season tent. It's really nice, and we have... Right now, we're using our old sleeping bags from the old trip, which are rated at 50 degrees, which is not warm enough. But we just got two new tents coming in. We'll be picking them up in Huntington Beach, and they're rated for 16 degrees. So they're going to keep us a lot warmer at night. And, during the day, we're all right, you know, because we're constantly moving and stuff. But I know once we get up north, it's going to be a whole different story. It's going to be really cold. So... we'll just have to get better gear and, you know, more clothing and stuff when we get up there.
So when do you expect to be done with this walk?
We thought it was going to be about 4 months. We want to end it on March 11th, which is the day we started our Atlantic to Pacific. That's just a goal. You know, I don't know if it's possible or not. That we would really, really have to push it to make that happen. But... You know, we don't want to push this. You know, we want to have a good time and experience everything. But we also, you know, you don't want to spend too much time out here because it is expensive. So we have, but that's kind of the goal of March 11th. But it's going to take us about 4 months for the whole thing.
And do you have any specific goals or hopes for this second walk?
We hope to make it.
Right.
That's the no, we're just, you know, we're just going with it, and we hope that it goes like the last one. We meet a bunch of good people, and we're safe, and we'll just finish it and be safe, pretty much. You know, just stay, don't get hurt.
And if people listening to this want to help you guys out on your walk or any of the causes you support, how can they do that?
We have our Instagram, which we post every day. We post pretty, I'm sure you know, we post probably once every few hours almost, I think. It's a big part of our trip is our social media. So we have our Instagram, American Wayfarers, and we have our Facebook, which we do, you know, longer videos and also the pictures that we put up. Our Facebook is facebook.com/ Atlantic to Pacific Walk. We haven't changed that because it's hard to change that. But you can also, I'm sure if you search American Wayfarers in Facebook, you'll find us too. And then we have our YouTube channel, that which we just started up, which we're putting our full-length videos on. That's American Wayfarers. And also we have our website that fully describes everything about us. It has descriptions about me, Raina, Larry, our cart. It has, you know, our mission, why we're doing this. It has, you know, our list of all of our towns we're going to be walking through up this West Coast. It has pictures from our last trip. We actually walked around, when we were in Hawaii for 6 weeks, we walked around the island, and we have pictures from that trip on there. And there's just a bunch of stuff. So our website kind of has everything. And that's AmericanWayfarers.com.
Well, I hope that people will definitely check you out, and they do post throughout the day. It's fun to watch your guys' trip. It's like I can kind of live through you for the moment until I figure out how to do something.
Is it?
Myself.
Yeah, we don't know how it is from other people's their angle. So.
Or it makes me appreciate things. Like, again, this morning when I woke up and I'm bitching in my head about the cold weather, and I'm like, or I could be like them, sleeping in a tent outside right now.
Yeah, it could be that bad, too. Yeah.
Well, before I let you guys go, and, you know, again, thank you for making some time for me. Is there anything that you want to share about your walk or things that you've learned on your walk that you want more people to know?
Not really. We just want to thank, you know, everyone that helped us out on this trip, and you know, we love doing this, and we hope we meet a lot more great people. And also, if, you know, something that you don't have to necessarily walk cross country up the West Coast, but you know, just get out there and go on your own little adventure, and also, you know, take care of the environment at the same time. And yeah, and that's about it.
And I'm sorry, I lied. I have to ask one more. What are the chances that when you end this walk, you're going to try to plan another one?
That's always an option. right now, you know, we would love to, but it's the financial thing is where we're at. You know, we're making this one work. You know, we're getting donations, you know, kind of, but, you know, we have savings, but it's not, we don't want to put ourselves in a debt or something like that. So we would love to go on another trip, but we have to really look for a full financial support or something like that for another trip. So we would love to, but that's not in the plans right now. But you never know what could happen. And if
that's
we did,
true.
You never know, we might walk from the Pacific to the Atlantic or something.
Hey, well, the fact that you're getting two walks in, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Well, thank you again for your time, and you two be safe out there.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.